Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. My guest today is an internationally collected artist and a grief coach. Interesting combination, huh? She specializes in helping those who have experienced loss to imagine, create, and live a life they love while utilizing artistic expression to do it. Her name is Morgan Tanner, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. Morgan, thank you so much for joining me.
Yes, thank you so much, Bobby, for having me. I'm really excited.
Absolutely. I've been looking forward to this. And I know we kind of connected on LinkedIn. I don't remember how that was, but we connected there. And I just became really interested in what you do and the story that led you there. So can you share with us a little bit?
Yes, of course. And I have met so many awesome people on LinkedIn lately. And like you mentioned, it's just so random happenstance. And then I try to look back and I'm like, where did I actually meet this person? And I can't really backtrack it, but they end up becoming really good friends and very supportive people in my network. So I'm loving
it. Interesting. Yeah.
As far as how I kind of got started doing what I'm doing now, I'm a grief coach and I integrate the elements of art therapy within my grief coaching with clients. I started this by the toughest way to learn, which is by personal experience. Yeah. So I was 20 and my mom died. It was, as much as I would have wanted to believe at that time that I was an adult, I was still very much a kid. I was very much a child. And being an only child, my mom was really like my genuine best friend. And that was a very tough loss at such an early age.
That's so young.
Very young. And, you know, I was in the middle of college. I was looking forward to so many big and important days that, of course, I was expecting her to be there to see me achieve all of those things, to see me graduate or one day when I get married or play with her grandbabies.
Yeah. All those dreams.
Yeah. I think I realized through that process that whenever you lose anything significant in your life, that could be like I personally experienced loss of a loved one, loss of a person, or it could even be loss of a job, loss mm-hmm. of a very firm relationship. You obviously suffer the very immediate consequence of the loss, but what you spend time working out after that are the things that you've lost as far as your identity.
Oh.
That you have attached to these things that you've lost.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. any significant loss has some of that attached.
Yeah. Especially if our relationships with people or with things are sometimes uneven or unhealthy. And we might not even realize that until after that thing or that person is gone. And we have to work all of that back out for ourselves to be able to stand on our own.
Yeah.
And that's not uncovered until you lose something like that or lose someone in that way.
Yeah. It's interesting to me. So do you always do people always come to that realization like, oh, maybe that wasn't that healthy, or, you know, maybe it wasn't.
It is very difficult to come to that realization on your own. And that's actually why I decided to become a grief coach, because it took me several years of doing a lot of research independently, studying online, listening to lectures, watching other people who have been very successful in this process, or not necessarily just within loss, but very successful in overcoming adverse circumstances and basically coming out fighting on the other side of it. And I said, that's what I want. I want to be like that. So how can I achieve that? What are all these people doing that I'm not doing?
Yeah. And you say that took a couple of years.
It did. It took several years to learn all of the fundamentals and to be able to practice self-reflection and basically distilling down within all of the people that I was observing and that I was learning from. What are the commonalities? What are the core tenets in what they're doing? Yeah. And how can I apply that to my life? And after I mastered that with myself, I've been helping other people with the same thing.
Yeah. So what were some of those things that were most helpful for you at that point?
The number one thing that I tell anyone who asks me for advice is to stop complaining. And I know that that might sound a little bit harsh, especially coming from someone who's a grief coach, right? Like the people who I work with are going through very hurtful, traumatic, and unexpected and sometimes fragile experiences. But what I've realized is each time that we complain, that's basically us just reliving that same emotional state that hurt us in the first place. So I always tell people, was once not enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
It already took you down. It already hurt you the first time. So each time you repeat it, you're just making yourself more miserable because you're going through that emotional churn. You're not actually working through the emotions and embracing them. It's almost like you're just keeping them around, holding on to them without actually processing them.
Yeah. You're kind of reliving them and keeping them alive at the same time.
Exactly. You keep stuck in the past.
Yeah. So in that case, like when you say stop complaining, like what would be an example of what someone would be complaining about?
So what I've noticed a lot of people get in the habit of doing is basically assuming or thinking, oh my gosh, I even did it whenever mom died. Like, no, mom was supposed to be here to see me graduate. I can't believe she's not here. This is not fair. Why me? She's so wonderful. Like, she was a great person. And there's so many terrible people out there in the world. Why would mom be the one to go early? And why did this happen to me? And blah, 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 blah. And I would just keep reliving that same thing over and over again. And I really can't change the result. And it just made me feel worse each time.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. I get where you're coming from with that one. So that makes perfect sense. So that's one. How do people respond when you say that to them?
Most people. Yeah. Most people in general, I would say the general public, doesn't know how to talk to someone who's grieving.
That's right.
It's a very personal and touchy subject. You don't want to say the wrong thing. You don't want to come across the wrong way. But people who have been through it kind of know what it's like. And what I've noticed and what I've learned is people who are going through the grieving process have already done the toughest part. They've already experienced the initial acute pain of the loss itself.
Yeah.
And what most people really want is to find a way to get out of that pain and to be able to not necessarily forget about it, not necessarily move on, but to be able to imagine a life with purpose, hope, meaning, joy, all the things that they had in their life before they experienced this loss.
Hmm.
And my clients are so strong already. Yeah. They've already endured the worst of it. So me coming to them with a little bit more of a direct approach, they understand that I have their best interests at heart. And together, we're going to have to do some hard stuff and we're going to have to stop some bad habits and implement some new, more meaningful habits, but with the end result and the reward being a life of purpose and meaning again, and being able to create anew is what keeps the drive there. And we're on such a good level of trust and rapport, they know that giving all of the advice from a place of love for them, and sometimes tough love is needed. Yeah. You don't always have to be super touchy around the subject.
Yeah. So, okay. And I want to get back to, because I don't want to take us too far off. I want to get back to other things that helped you. But sure. When you said that, you know, it sounds like, you know, moving through it so that they get to a place where they feel, you know, back to hope and purpose and meaning. When someone experiences a loss, is it that those things, we kind of lose touch with those things a little bit?
Yes, Bobby, a little bit. You do lose touch with that because it is so hard. I call it the fog. You're stuck in this place of darkness filled mm-hmm. with fog after this loss.
Yeah.
And you could try and try and try to see your way out of it. But if you don't have someone with a flashlight who's going to come help you and going to come save you and help guide you out of it, you're so overwhelmed with the negativity, the things that you keep repeating to yourself, and you're so stuck in that emotional state of the loss itself.
Yeah.
That you almost can't see outside of it. It's hard at first to be able to see what life could be like later. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because to use your metaphor, I think the fog can seem so dense.
Yeah.
You know, like you can't even see that through your windshield at times. Okay. So that makes sense.
You get overwhelmed and you might try to start taking some steps and you get lost. You might keep walking in circles, or you might get to the point like some of my clients do where they've been working so hard on their own to try to get through this that they just give up and they say, you know what, whatever. I can't see a way out of this. I'm just going to stop.
Wow. And that'd be the saddest of all.
It is.
You know, when we just stop. As you know, we recently lost our dog, and I mean, we don't have kids. So losing Riley was like losing a baby. And it was interesting because I was doing some reading and some people who lost their dogs, they say, you know, I'll never get another dog again. And it's like, but that's, you know, why give up that friendship that, you know,
but we
do those. And I think it's because we're trying to protect ourselves from feeling that again. Who wants to feel it again? Nobody, you know? Okay. So the first thing you said was stop complaining, because that's a way that we keep kind of reliving it. What else helped you at that time?
A big thing for me was to make my emotions tangible.
Ooh, tell me more about that.
Yes. That's where art comes into the picture for me.
Yeah.
What I realized after my mom died is that people meant well, of course, they always do when they try to give you words of encouragement or a gift of some sort. But people gave me a lot of pictures, framed photos of my mom. And I saw them all laying around on the countertop. And then I would just look at them and get sad. For a couple of months, I tried to dig deep into my mind of what's going on here. Why am I getting upset just by seeing a photo of my mom? That's when it clicked for me. I realized that I was reminded of the loss every time I saw a picture of her, rather than being reminded of all of the positive things that we shared together, her soul and her spirit, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, okay. So then what'd you do with that?
Basically mapped out conceptually based on specific colors or themes in nature that cohesively came together within one painting that reminds me of my mom, but in a positive way. Every time I see it, it makes me smile.
Nice.
And it let me let go of the ideas that, oh, you know, mom should be here for my wedding one day. She should have been here to see me graduate college. I don't look at it and remind myself of all the things that she wasn't here for. I'm reminded of all the things that she was there for and how she prepared me for a life without her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what you mean by making the emotions tangible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if someone's listening to this, like, and they're going through some kind of loss, and like you said, a loss can be, it could be anything. You know, I was talking to someone the other day and they were like, God, I'm just grieving for, you know, the mom and pop restaurants that had to close their doors, you know, so we can grieve for a lot of different things. What does someone do to make their emotions tangible using the artistic, you know, expression?
That's the main element of how I work with my clients. It took me a while to really shape what is meaningful in that piece of art, or what is a good reminder visually for you to keep for yourself. every time you look at it. So any advice that I would really give within a short window of time, I don't know if it would really do anyone very much justice, but utilizing artistic expression can help you a lot through, I think, is very healing. And yeah, art can help you through a lot of hardship. But if someone is interested about making this process happen for themselves, they can contact me and I can show them a little bit more about my longer 8-week program where we can develop a painting specifically for them that's meaningful.
Okay. And now we should say too, now you are an artist, right? You've been painting for 15 years?
15 years. Yep.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now, okay. So that begs the question, because like, I'm not a painter. Is this an approach that anyone can use, or do you have to have like some kind of artist inside of you? You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. When you think about it, the whole idea of moving through loss and grief is being able to create a new life for yourself at the end of it.
Okay.
Anyone who has the ability to create is an artist.
Okay.
So if you can imagine creating a new life for yourself and you want to be able to not just pick up the pieces and put them back together, that always reminds you that something is missing. But if you want to be able to create a new life for yourself, this approach can work for you. A lot of my clients have no particular art experience, but it's more meaningful for you to put all of those emotions on paper or on a canvas for yourself than it is for me to necessarily create that for you.
Yeah. Okay.
We work together. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. So then that leads me to the distinction you just kind of made there, which, you know, I think, because we hear all the time, oh, we're going to pick up the pieces, we're going to put them back together, you know, versus maybe creating something new. I don't know how to ask the question that's rattling around in my head, but it seems like getting to something new is more, I don't know, valuable. Is that, how would you talk about that?
I would say a lot of people hesitate to move through their grief because they feel a lot of guilt. They're holding on to, like I've worked with people who have been widowed before, and they're holding on to this promise that they made together in a marriage of, oh, well, we wanted to go on our 30th anniversary trip to New Zealand. Well, right. Oh, I don't want to go to New Zealand because I feel like I'm betraying who I lost.
Yeah.
Right. Like holding on to that guilt that is almost keeping you in a state of stagnation without being able to move through it and keep doing the things that you enjoy. So it's, of course, I do work with my clients on the identity piece that we talked about earlier of what, who you truly are.
Yeah.
And working through some of those beliefs that might be holding us back from doing things that we think we would enjoy just out of guilt through the loss. But being able to create a new life for yourself is really, when you think about it, going back to your true identity that you might not have realized was attached to these other things that you've lost.
Right.
Yeah. So that's really what it's about.
Yeah. That getting to the true identity, I mean, is that sometimes a challenge to work towards?
If someone is not ready for that, it is very challenging.
Yeah.
But I would say throughout the process, you realize that you've been holding on to so many stories that you've told yourself over and over again of, oh, that's not me. This is me. Or, you know, I've gotten this one a lot. I am so-and-so's wife.
Yeah.
Instead of I am myself.
Right.
And we work through all those things together, and it's very empowering more than it is challenging.
Yeah.
But if someone is not ready to do that, then yes, it's going to be very hard.
Yeah. Well, okay. So that reminds me, when we talked before, and this has been a few weeks now, but I think that you said something like, we get stuck in our old stories.
We do.
Yeah. Is that kind of what you mean by it?
Yes, pretty much. So let's say I'll use my personal experience from losing my mom. I grew up with a heavy math and science influence within my family, and everyone was very supportive. I was naturally good at math and science. Those are my strengths. Mm-hmm. I've always had an interest in art, but, you know, almost that little nudge of, hey, you could make a lot of good money if you wanted to be a scientist, or if you wanted to be a mathematician or a professor or an engineer. So I actually did build a lot of my identity around, I need to be a good student. I need to please my parents. Yeah. And like, they were so supportive and wonderful people. And I never really felt pressured, but, you know, I kind of adopted what the goals were for me. And I grew into that. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of college, whenever mom died and she wasn't there to see me graduate with an electrical engineering degree, I was like, what is this for? What does this mean? Is that really what I wanted to do? Why did I do this? And you get riddled with all of these questions. So I had to kind of work through that of, who am I? Who do I want to be? And who maybe have I been all along? But I kind of covered that up because I kept hanging on to a relationship or an older story that I kept repeating to myself, that I wasn't allowing my true identity to come through.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I remember that you said that you have that, you're an engineer, which on one hand, it's like, okay, how did you end up being like a painter for 15 years? But I hear what you're saying about, we create these stories and then we seek to be consistent with those stories.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. So we said the two things, the stop complaining, make the emotions tangible. What other things were helpful for you at the time?
I would say that the advice here would be more of what to avoid rather than what to specifically do. So you hear people give general grief advice where they're like, time heals all wounds.
Mm-hmm.
My advice is don't wait.
Oh,
yeah.
Tell me more about that, because you never hear that.
Yes. Well, a lot of the, I would say, mainstream advice that you hear, people mean well. And usually when we hear something that we think, oh, okay, yeah, like that kind of makes sense. I want to help my friend. And we just kind of parrot things. But really, if you wait and you assume time is going to heal my grief, time does not heal your grief. Time distances you from your grief.
Yeah.
So really what you've got to do is you've got to work through the emotions, and don't wait to do that, because the longer time gap you just wait and you kind of sit on it, or you shove it away, you distract yourself, you numb yourself, the longer you do that, you're developing coping mechanisms. You're not healing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then what happens when you do decide to start doing some of that work? Does it take longer?
It doesn't necessarily take longer, but you have to unlearn those coping mechanisms that you had set in place initially to try to fumble through it, or at least kind of get past it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's good. Don't wait. Yeah. That's counterintuitive to what we hear.
Yeah.
And it does, you know, the expression, you know, oh, time heals all wounds. It almost makes it seem like it's somehow magically going to happen.
Exactly.
You know, versus there's work that we have to do to go through it. Okay. So that's good. That's a good don't. any other don'ts that you have?
Okay. This is a do and a don't together.
So okay.
Face your triggers. Don't avoid them.
So tell me what you mean. I think I know, but tell me what you mean by triggers.
Yeah. So, let's say there's a specific song that you hear and it reminds you of someone, and you're like, oh, you know, I don't want to ever listen to that song again.
Uh-huh.
It makes me think about them. Or you went to a specific place on vacation every year, and then now they're gone, and you tell yourself, I'm never going back. I never want to go back again. Never. I can't go without them.
Yeah.
Even sometimes there are people that trigger some kind of emotion in you that gives you a heavy emotional, stirs up your emotions whenever you see them or whenever you talk to them. But what I found is the longer that you avoid your triggers, you're not really doing yourself any service, because this is typical advice, or that someone would say you do. Okay, well, I'm going to make sure that I avoid that I identify anything that is going to trigger these emotions in me, I'm going to avoid them at all costs, and then I'm going to be fine, right? Like, that's the assumption.
Yeah.
But I always tell my clients, do you want to spend your life running away from things or running to something?
Yeah.
Anytime that you actively are wanting to distance yourself from an experience or a person, you are giving all of your power to that thing or to that circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I teach my clients how to face their triggers head on with some practical tools, right? Of how to do that so they can take their power back and they can use those same tactics to process any new things that come into their life on a daily basis. So you don't have to go through all of that unpacking again later when you have those tools to carry you throughout the rest of your life.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of the, you know, what you resist persists.
Yes.
You know, I was, when you were talking there, Morgan, and about the, you know, the songs or whatever, this was years ago and I'd completely forgotten about it until you were talking. I was at a grocery store and you know how they always have that bad music or whatever. And I didn't know where it was, like in the soup aisle or something. And all of a sudden some song came on and the woman who we were standing next to each other looking at whatever, and she burst into tears. And I was like, are you okay? And she's like, I have to leave the store. Like, she left her cart and left the store. And it was, I don't know who it reminded her of, but it was, but that's as much as she shared. And she's like, I just have to leave. I'm like, oh my God, that's hard. That's painful, you know, because I don't know that we can always be completely successful at avoiding those triggers.
Exactly.
You want to be, you know? Okay. So that's another good don't and do. Any other don'ts that people should know about?
I would say that those are really the core important things to remember that we've already talked about.
Yeah.
Don't avoid your triggers and really don't wait. Those are the top two.
Okay. That's really good. And thank you for sharing those. That's terrific.
Of course.
You had said when we talked before, it was about a year ago. I think you said it was like last year when you kind of had a really big pivot. Can you tell me about that a little bit?
Yes, for sure. I think that I went through a lot of introspective thinking, like most of us were kind of forced to in quarantine.
Yeah, can't escape.
I thought to myself, okay, how am I spending each day? Where am I allocating my time? And is that fulfilling to me? Hmm. Yes or no? Probably took about a month to really take a good inventory of where my time was being dedicated and where my energy was being dedicated. And then at the end of it, how did I really feel about that? If I said, if I repeat this same month for the next year, is this what I want?
That's a great question right there. Yeah. So when you asked yourself that question, what was your answer?
Yeah, well, my first answer was I was watching way too much TV. And after I sat in it for long enough, realized that I was basically distracting myself from other things that I was not fulfilled with doing. I was spending my day doing things that didn't really fulfill me. And then I would spend my afternoons and my weekends trying to escape from that through the television.
Yeah. And I don't think that's that uncommon, you know?
That's really why people have so many unhealthy habits, like overspending, watching way too much TV. I mean, even really when you get into drinking and stuff like that too, you adopt those things usually as some escape method, trying to escape something else in your life.
Yeah. And now this might sound like a real obvious question, but I'm just thinking about for people listening, when you said, you know, you looked at it and you said that the things you were doing, it was not fulfilling. How did you know that it wasn't?
I did what I call an energy inventory.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, I said, do I have more or less energy than what I started my day with? And what things either pulled that energy away from me or what things gave some energy back to me? That's really how I found out, is by reflecting on where did I feel like my energy was being sucked out of me from what I was doing? And then where I really felt like my energy was being replenished.
Yeah. Just paying attention to that is huge, you know, and it can change so many times throughout the day.
Exactly.
You know? Okay. So that's really good. So you had that kind of epiphany, and then did you change things as a result?
I did. The first thing I changed cold turkey was I got rid of that television.
Oh, immediately.
I said, okay, I realized that even though I was trying to escape and I was trying to avoid some other things, why do I keep the temptation around? I've already identified that it's not serving me and it's not helping me find my purpose or be fulfilled. So, all right, we're cutting that out.
Wow.
And yeah, I sold my TV the week after I decided that.
Good for you.
And canceled Netflix. And man, it's been almost a year that I haven't had a television. And, you know, my friends come over and they're like, what, are you crazy? I cannot believe that you don't have a TV. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I wouldn't do anything. I would not go back in a million years, because I had so much more time after that I got to dedicate to building what I'm doing now, which is helping coach people through grief. And that is a million times more fulfilling to me than sitting down and watching a Netflix binge is.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe a little bit more work, but if it's work you love, then who cares, right?
Exactly. And after 5 hours of working on, you know, either my training sessions, Q&A calls, or one-on-one mentoring, all of these activities that I do in the evenings, Facebook Lives, all kinds of stuff, I realized that spending 5 hours doing that gives me five times more energy than sitting on the couch for 5 hours did. So,
yeah. Wow. Good for you. You know, I was just talking, it was someone I interviewed last week, and we were talking about how just being aware of what is going on with you, your body, your energy, you know, your thoughts.
Yeah.
Awareness is so key. And I think a lot of times we fill our days so that we don't have time to think about it.
You know? Exactly. Yeah. That idle time.
Yeah.
If you're not in the mental headspace to actually be present just with yourself and with your own thoughts. Yeah. That can be brutal.
It can be brutal. It really can be. So now you've kind of alluded to it, but how are some of the different ways that people, you know, what are some of the different ways that people work with you?
The primary way that people work with me is actually through an 8-week program.
Mm-hmm.
It is a peer supportive group. So throughout the 8 weeks, they have access to all of the information that they'll need. You know, the things that we talked about earlier, getting back to your core identity, being able to create that new life for yourself.
Yeah.
I walk through that with each person who joins my group coaching through the 8 weeks. And I also do help them come up with the concept and the idea for their symbolic painting at the end to represent their journey and their life moving forward.
Nice. That's really cool. And you say it's peer supported.
Yes, it is a peer supported group. So what I've learned is so helpful for my clients is a lot of people, you have friends and family who love you and want so badly to be able to help or relate to you, and they might not be able to really understand what you're going through.
Yeah.
Especially after the first couple of months. I mean, the minute that my mom died, I got, goodness gracious, like 2,000 Facebook notifications. I had probably 50 voicemails and 100 and something text messages, and it was overwhelming of the amount of people who were trying to say, hey, I love you. Hey, I'm here for you.
Yep.
But it's so crazy because a month later, it's like crickets.
Yeah.
And when you don't have somebody or a network of people who are going to be there for you genuinely every day to listen to you, to support you, and who kind of understand your point of view and understand where you're coming from, you tend to feel really isolated.
Yeah.
So having the group support is really essential in being able to move through all of the emotions and all the work that we do.
Yeah. And I think that there's a little bit of the people want you to move through it so that the discomfort for them goes away, maybe, you know.
In what way do you think?
I'm thinking about sometimes people are like, aren't you over it yet?
Mm.
Like, I've heard people say that to other people, and I'm like, they'll get over it when they're, you know, it's their own journey, you know. And sometimes I think we feel uncomfortable when we're around someone who's grieving, because if we love them, or it's just a perfect stranger. I don't care who it is. I want him to feel better.
Yes. You know?
And I think it's kind of like, but sometimes that can, I don't know, to your point, it can add to that feeling of just the crickets.
Yeah. And Bobby, you're so right. A lot of people that maybe they're not directly connected to the loss. Let's say someone loses their dad, mm-hmm. and they have a couple of other family members that aren't in the immediate family. They're not as directly connected to what we've lost over here. So they might be a little bit quicker through moving through that while this person is still stuck and can't see their way out on their own. So yeah. This group of people over here are thinking, what's wrong with you? I've gotten over this a long time ago. What are you doing?
Yep.
Or almost being impatient sometimes. And I know that no one means any harm by that. It is human nature. If we're not directly connected to it, that we empathize, but we can't really sit in that person's shoes. So it's hard mm-hmm. to really comprehend how quickly they're able to move through this or even see their way through it.
Yeah. So I would think that the peer group could be, I mean, all of it would be helpful. And then having those people that would know, like, hey, this is what I'm going through. That I think that would just bring some comfort, you know?
Yes. A lot of comfort, a lot of support. And we are very direct with each other. So we make promises to each other and we're big on accountability. And when we say that we're going to implement these things in the next week, we come back and we check in on each other and we say, hey, you said, let's talk about it. Why didn't you do it? And then we can get to some roadblocks and start knocking some things down and make progress. But the accountability and support that you get within a peer group is huge in being able to make progress and feeling like you're not alone.
Yeah. Oh, I can completely see that. Completely. Yep. All right. So how can people learn, like if they're interested and they want to connect with you or learn more, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, they could go directly to my website. It's www.morgantannerart.com. Or you could give me a call at 318-680-3524.
Perfect. And we can put those in the show notes as well. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you being here. And final question for you that I'm just kind of thinking, you know, going back to, I don't know, if there's one piece of advice, if someone's listening, and it could be something that you've already said too, but if someone's really hurting out there, they're going through a loss, what is one thing that you'd really want them to know?
The one thing that I would remind anyone who has experienced a loss is that don't wait, because the longer that you wait to really work through these emotions, you're setting yourself up for failure later, because mm-hmm. you're only developing coping mechanisms to get you through this time, to get you through the next day, and not mm-hmm. really making progress toward creating a new life.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, Morgan, thank you so much. This has been great. And I appreciate you taking the time to be here and share with us.
Thank you, Bobby. This was awesome. I really appreciate it.
I hope that you found a lot of nuggets in that conversation. Here are my three insights for thriving. One, don't wait to grieve and begin healing. We hear all the time that time heals all wounds, but time actually doesn't heal the wound. It distances us from the pain or the grief, but it doesn't heal it. We have to do the grief work in order to heal. Number two, I loved the question that Morgan asked herself while she was doing her energy inventory and noticing how she spent her days over the course of a month. And the question was this: if I repeated this month for the next year, how will I feel about that? And finally, number three, if we are just picking up the pieces and putting them back together again, then we may just be reminding ourselves of what's missing. It seems like from this interview and others similar to it, that healing is more about finding a new way forward or an enhanced way of being. Now, maybe this has just been on my mind quite a bit lately, as we first experienced the loss associated with the massive East Troublesome wildfire that, as we've learned over the last few months, was dangerously close to us by the time that we evacuated. It turns out, based on what we've learned, that we were mere minutes ahead of the fire. And by mere, I mean less than 10 minutes. And it's frightening. And as the snow is beginning to melt, more and more of the blackened earth is being revealed. Now, of course, we've seen the blackened trees all winter, where before they were lush and green and beautiful. But now, as the snow is melting, we are seeing that the very earth, and I mean the dirt, the boulders, are blackened. They're scorched. I didn't even know that they could burn. The smell of soot is becoming really strong again, which are all reminders of that scary night. And then, of course, we had to say goodbye to our beloved Riley, our wonderful dog, a few weeks ago. And as Rick and I have gone through the process of grieving these things, I found myself thinking about things that I want to do differently in the future, or different ways that I want to be in the future. And what I found is that it's easy for these to become regrets. And I know that regret and guilt can be part of the grieving process, but at times I found myself crying and thinking, why didn't I make even more time for Riley? Or, you know, what was so important that kept me from doing that? And I understand that this is, again, that this is a normal part of the grieving process. And I'm also working towards healing and hopefully at some point being able to embrace the things that I want to change for the future without also feeling that gnaw of regret. Because the regret, it's painful, and I don't think it's adding a lot of value. But I'm trusting that this is all part of the process. If you liked this conversation, I hope that you'll share it with a friend, as that's the ultimate compliment that you can pay us. And of course, that's why we started the podcast, just to share stories that would help other people thrive. On a different note, we are busy building a course to be ready spring of 2021. It's called Start Your Future Today. And we're excited to offer it because it brings together our experience over the last 20 years in creating the life that we love to live every day. So if you've ever found yourself saying, I feel stuck or trapped, and I don't know how to move forward, or I know what I want to do, but I don't know if it's possible, or things are pretty good, I wonder if there's something more, then this course is for you. In it, you'll learn how to describe the future you want that is inspiring and motivating to you, how to start moving towards that exciting future, and then you can also, if you like, submit your story to me for feedback and ideas on potential next steps. This course will help you start your future right away. Because here's the thing, you do not have to wait. The pen is in your hand. You will learn an approach and skills to write and live towards the next chapter of your life story. So for a limited time, we are giving away scholarships to this course. And here's how you can enter. It's four simple steps. Number one, subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Two, leave a review of the podcast. Three, take a screenshot of your review. And four, simply email the screenshot to hello@unyielded.net with the subject, Start Program. And we're going to select five lucky winners over the next month to receive a scholarship for the course. So once again, I just want to say thank you so much for tuning in to Unyielded. And I truly hope that you're finding value in the interviews and in the podcast. Because we started this podcast as a way to share ideas and stories of people who are finding a way to grow and thrive and flourish. Because it all comes down to thriving no matter what.